Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
High atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
One killed and two are injured in a shooting at a Northeast Portland bar. An explosion at Moscow's busiest airport kills over 300 people. And a boy scares off wolves with Megadeth.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, January 24th, 2011. One man is dead and two others are injured in what police are calling a gang-related shooting outside a Northeast Portland bar early this morning.
Is it last Friday already?
This happened in Northeast Portland, too, is what's so shocking. It's not Southeast Portland.
Damn, sorry. Okay.
An argument between two groups of men about 12:45 a.m. Monday outside JD's Bar and Grill.
An argument, you say?
An argument.
Okay, a misunderstanding of some kind, a kerfuffle.
Yes.
A dispute.
A brouhaha.
Okay. Perhaps. An imbroglio.
Exactly. It spilled outside the establishment, where shots were fired, according to Kelly Schaefer, a police spokeswoman. Three men were shot and transported during the incident, one of whom died later. Witnesses told arriving officers the suspects left the 4500 Northeast 60th bar in a black Chrysler 300. Gresham officers located the car on Northeast 181st Avenue. Shortly thereafter, and attempted to stop the car, the driver was taken into custody at an ARCO station. The passenger, who bolted from the Chrysler after it stopped, was arrested nearby. Authorities believe the incident is gang-related, and gang enforcement officials continue to investigate. At least 31 people were killed and 130 more were injured in a suspected suicide bombing at Moscow's Domodedovo Airport, according to Russian authorities. The attack took place in the arrivals hall around 4:30 p.m. on Monday, and there was initially too much smoke to count the number of casualties. The latest figure is that it has killed at least 315 people. The city was put on terror alert soon after. This is National Security contributor Fran Townsend, who says that the incident could prompt changes at U.S. airports.
Michelle and I offer our...
I'm sorry, what is this cut?
This is Moscow 3.
I don't expect you'll see people having to park further away, although that has often been a concern for security officials. The question will be, will there be more of a police presence? Will you see more bomb-sniffing dogs as you enter through an arrival area?
A traveler identified as Victor told the Russian newspaper that he heard the blast from outside the airport. He said there was an explosion, a bang, then I saw a policeman covered in fragments of flesh and all bloody. He was shouting, "I've survived, I've survived." The explosion is the worst terror attack in Russia since last March, when twin bombings killed 40 people in a Moscow subway. More than 20 million passengers a year travel through Domodedovo, which is the country's largest airport. Fran Townsend says the incident has broad-reaching implications.
Our understanding right now is that the suicide bomber comes into the arrivals area where you pick up your bags. The problem with that for U.S. officials is there is no screening. Anyone can come into the arrivals area to meet guests, to pick up their bags.
At Soviet airport, flying objects land on you.
Yes. In other words, for the time being, you can enter the arrivals airport.
You're totally disregarding my Yakov Smirnov joke. I'm just glossing right over it. Like I didn't even say it. Like I'm just speaking to nobody.
I was being kind, really. By letting us just move on.
The thing about that is that I then have to interrupt because I have to give credit to Seamus, who did not contribute that specific joke, but who did email me, I swear to Christ, at 3:36 this morning. And he said, the subject line is, just so I can be first with this. And then he had in Soviet Russia, you know, and the thing about the airport and I gave it a little polish. I took it to the, I workshopped it a little bit.
I really had no idea you'd put this much effort into it.
I gave it a once over.
I thought it was best to just, you know, kind of pretend it never happened. But obviously, it was important to you.
One has to laugh to keep from crying in this crazy existential world of ours, Don. It is Legion of News, and good afternoon to you. It is 8 minutes after the hour of 12. It is January 24th. That is a Monday for 2011. I'm Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. Still to come this hour, we got your entertainment news, also science on the march. Don't forget, this program is available later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. And you can also get it on your mobile device if you like. It is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
A manhunt is underway in Waldport, Oregon, for a man suspected of shooting a Lincoln City police officer during a traffic stop on a coastal highway. The officer was shot more than once after he pulled over a car for speeding around 11:30 p.m. Sunday. The 45-year-old officer has been flown to Legacy Emanuel Hospital. He's in critical condition, and his family and fellow officers are at the hospital. The suspect vehicle, a 1985 Dodge SUV, fled south on Highway 101. It was spotted by Newport police. Several shots were fired by officers in the chase. None were hit. The car was then stopped by spike strips around 11:30 p.m. on the highway at Waldport. The driver fled into the woods. Roads have been closed and the opening of Waldport schools delayed while a search for the suspect is conducted by state police.
Where is Waldport again?
Out on the coast.
Near
Lincoln City.
That direction?
Yeah, you know, westward.
Okay.
Sir.
Thank you. It is Monday. It is January 24th, 2011. This is Legion of News. Don't forget, coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program storms the airwaves and encircles the globe. That is at rickemersonshow.com, rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Well, it was reported last week that Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman will not run for re-election in 2012. He says he's given a lot of thought, and it's the right time to move on.
I'm sorry. Hold on. I gotta do that thing I do where I separate the Joe Lieberman soundbites from the droopy dog soundbites, because they all tend to drift together. All right, here we go.
I have decided that it's time to turn the page to a new chapter. And so I will not be a candidate for re-election to a fifth term in the United States Senate in 2012. That was not an easy decision for me to make because I've loved serving in the Senate and I feel good about what I've accomplished.
It's like listening to the assembled collection of all the Reader's Digest humor in uniform articles between 1972 and 1985.
He says he made his wife a promise some time ago.
I promise you that when Regis leaves television, I'll leave the Senate.
Oh,
and here we are.
Joe Lieberman. Oh, Joe Mintum.
The best part there is like the little half laugh at the end.
I promise you that when Regis leaves television, I'll leave the Senate. And here we are.
Right. there we go. I would give anything to have an authentic Joe Mintum shirt. And the thing is, now maybe it was sort of a bell curve. I feel like I've missed my opportunity because there was, you know, they were difficult to get when he was actually when he was on the VP slot. And then when he just settled into life, there was a sort of flurry of interest and he became an independent. But then once he settled just back into being a regular, you know, just a schmo, they would have been easy to get. Now I've waited too long.
Yeah.
Now the Jomentum shirts are going to be, they're going to be a scarce commodity. They're going to be in short supply. Limited edition.
Maybe you should print your own.
Yeah, but that just feels cheap.
Jomentum 2012.
It just feels
kind of
wrong.
A little ironic sort of a thing.
But
now that
I would know it wasn't real is the thing. If I'm going to have Jomentum, it's going to be honest-to-goodness real Jomentum, Don
Sincere
Taylor.
Jomentum.
I'm not going to sully the...
Authentic Jomentum.
I'm not going to sully the name of Joe Lieberman with some sort of inauthentic bootleg swag. I won't have it.
It's important to have integrity.
That's right.
It really is. A man who had been out drinking in Sacramento, California, impaled his leg on a fence early Monday morning. Officers went called to 1818 P Street at 1:23 a.m. this morning after a report that a man was stuck on a fence and screaming. Police said the man had tried to hop a fence to get to the apartment complex where he lives. The man misjudged, landing on a spike of the metal fence instead. He was found hanging upside down when officers arrived.
Please tell me there's a photograph. Please, 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 please. Come on. Please, please, please. Maybe. Please. Why isn't there a photograph?
I don't have one right now. I'll go look, though.
Okay.
Instead of pulling the man off the fence, the fire department cut out a 2-foot square piece of the fence and took him and the piece of fence to the hospital for treatment.
What is his name, please?
It doesn't say.
Oh, come on.
It doesn't say. They're trying to... But I suppose if you type in Sacramento man impaled on fence, you'll probably find it.
Okay, I've typed in Sacramento fence impaled. Okay, hold on. Oh, man. What does your headline say?
Mine says, police find screaming man impaled on fence.
This one, too. This is the only article I can find. This is from KCRA Sacramento. Police, it's the screaming man that really sells this here. Police find screaming man impaled on fence. Now, see, they're doing that frustrating thing here where they have a photograph of a fence with sort of like, what are those things, portcullis things? But I don't know if it's the fence. You just can't trust journalists anymore. You never know what's real and what's just a bunch of shenanigans.
No, it's particularly with a short story, with not a lot of text anymore. Like web designers, the poor schmoes who have to load everything up onto the website, they end up a lot of times just using stock photos. Like here, it's either KPTV or KGW here. They will often fill with a great big huge color photograph of just like the light on top of a police car.
That's almost certainly KGW.
Which does, you know, it's like, well, that's useful. It's like, we got to have something pretty and colorful in here.
KGW is really, they're at all times in the lead in the race to the ever-deepening bottom of journalistic standards in this city. That's Rick Emerson who said that, by the way.
More than two decades ago, 19-year-old Carlina White was snatched from a Harlem hospital. The woman who raised her and Pettaway surrendered to the FBI on Sunday and will face kidnapping charges in court today. The story, we reported on this on Friday, White grew up with Pettaway in Connecticut and Atlanta, but had a suspicion that she wasn't her real mother. She discovered her own baby picture on a website of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and contacted her biological mother. After the truth came out, Pettaway fled from North Carolina, where she was already on parole from stealing from her workplace, and then gave herself up in Connecticut.
Did you see this thing that Oprah has a new sister?
Oh,
like, she found a sister that it was like some sister she didn't know she had. Are we going to get to that later?
I'm going to get to that later.
Because all I really know is just that. I know the headline. That's about it. I have just the tiniest little thumbnail as regards that story in my head. I got nothing else. Back on the guy who's impaled and screaming on the fence.
Okay.
So I'm looking at this picture. Now, let's assume for the moment that this is not the picture. But even if it was, I don't understand the physics that are at work here. Because you got to fall. You got to fall like a great distance to impale yourself. Otherwise, you're just, I mean, I don't care how sharp the thing is, especially if you have pants on, you're not going to impale yourself. That requires velocity. And velocity, of course, requires acceleration over distance. So if you're scaling a fence, it doesn't seem like you can impale yourself. You could snag your jeans on it, but impaling is sort of a spearing.
No, we get these all. We actually had a story like this several months ago, and it was exactly the same thing. Some of those wrought iron fences, they have the little pointy things that look kind of like fleur-de-lis on top. And I think if you're climbing, and they're close enough together that it's like really hard, you can't like slip your leg in between them.
Right, you gotta go over them.
So you go over, and I think that if, like, particularly if you lose your handhold and you fall a little bit, you could come down on top of that thing. And then there's no way you can get the leverage to get your leg back up off of it. And just your weight alone is going to keep pushing you down.
I see. So
it.
Your weight is pulling you down. And meanwhile, the little tips have they've got some purchase, some adhesion into your leg. And then it's right in there just spearing you.
And then you're upside down and you can't push yourself up off of it. And plus, you're screaming in agonizing pain.
One of those dual-tined plastic olive fork things.
Kind of, yes.
Okay, that's exactly what it's like. So it's like an olive going over a fence made of fork tines.
Well, those things are basically, they're designed in a lot of ways like arrowheads. So I think it would be, even if you could kind of push your way back up, it would be hard to push yourself up off of it.
The best part is how they have to note here that the man misjudged.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
Also, victim had been drinking, police say.
Yeah.
I love this story. We could have this story every day.
We had this story several months ago. The teenage girls in the early 20s or teenagers, they'd been drinking, and they were trying to sneak into a public swimming pool.
That's
remember?
Right,
remember?
Yes.
And the girl got impaled on the fence, and they had to do the same thing. They had to cut the piece of fence out and take her away.
You know, whoever designed this fence really deserves a raise, because I got to say, it did the job. Well done, sir.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of like a roach motel, you know? Guy trying to sneak in, it not only stops him, but it keeps him there for the man. So, Rick Emerson, salute you. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Still to come this hour, your entertainment news, also science on the march. Coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, the Rick Emerson radio program. Today we'll talk to Mr. Aaron Duran, who has the Week in Geek. Also, I'm sure almost none of that is correct over there.
No, it's not. There's a, what is there? We have a Cheney watch and a snuff watch.
Snuff watch coming up today. Cheney watch, Aaron Duran with the Week in Geek, and we'll talk to Mr. Eric D. Snyder, who is in attendance at the Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah. That is coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Unless you are one of the sad, lonely, bereft souls who does not subscribe to the Rick Emerson radio program, in which case your life will just be filled with pain, misery, emptiness, and a void in your heart that cannot be filled no matter how many donuts you might consume. You don't want to be sad.
No.
Do you?
Even if you're full of donuts.
That's what I'm saying. RickEmersonShow.com, where you find out more about that. Here is Don Taylor.
A former member of an elite British police unit is scandalizing Britain by claiming that officials encouraged undercover cops to sleep with their targets while infiltrating anarchist and environmental groups, according to The Guardian. Contradicting claims from Metropolitan Police officials, the ex-cop said that promiscuity was part of the job, although, he said, falling in love was considered highly unprofessional.
You know, it's the same here.
Here at the Emerson News Network?
Yes.
Oh. Over the...
Not really.
Okay. Over the past month, three undercover officers have been flagged for sleeping with protesters that they were sent to spy on. One even married a former target, saying that they were specifically not given instructions about engaging in illicit activities and that it was tacitly acknowledged police would use sex to gather intelligence. As regards being with women in very, very, very promiscuous groups, such as the Eco Wing, Environmental Movement, Left Wing, or the Animal Liberation Front, it's an extremely promiscuous lifestyle, and you cannot be promiscuous. You cannot not be promiscuous there, remarked a former member of the Special Demonstration Squad.
Wait, let me understand this. So they are basically, what branch of government is this?
These are British police that were infiltrating what they thought, anarchist and
so
environmental
like leftist,
groups.
Like leftist, you know, like Earth First and assembled
right.
Nutcases. So basically, they're just confirming what a lot of people, what we already sort of know, which is that women who are found at either end of the political spectrum, not in the middle, but at either extreme of the political spectrum, are the ones who put out, like, regularly and constantly.
Well, they're saying specifically the eco people, the environmental, the left wing, the animal
that's
liberation
right.
front. So, I mean, it's like, that's not news.
No.
Hippie chicks are loose.
That's what
we
I'm saying.
We all know that. And apparently, you know, you gotta sleep with the hippie chicks or they'll know you're the man. It's like those movies where the guy has to do the
it's like Jason Patrick has to do a
yes,
line of cocaine.
He's got to do the heroin so they know that they don't think that he's the man.
I would say that if you were infiltrating some sort of a religious fundamentalist organization, though, you're going to find that those chicks, those chicks are like a slingshot where it's like the greater the initial resistance, the further you get with them.
Is that true?
Yes. Yes, it is. It's a checkable fact.
Okay. A 13-year-old Norwegian boy scared off a pack of wolves by playing them Megadeth on his mobile phone. Walter Aker was walking home from school in Rakkestad when he found himself in...
In Rakkestad? Really? Was he in a place called Rakkestad?
R-A-K-K-E... Yeah, S-T-A-D.
That's fantastic.
Rakkestad.
That's great. Death Clock is constantly playing there.
When he found himself encircled by the four snarling beasts. Just as they seemed about to attack, the petrified youngster pulled out his phone and played a song by Megadeth. He had previously been told not to run away from wolves, but to face them and attempt to scare them away. And the tactic worked, as the sound of heavy metal music sent the animals scattering in confusion.
Is he sure that it wasn't just the members of Celtic Frost and they were in animal form? I'm just saying. Like,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, there's, you know what it is? There's like two people out there that are going, Celtic Frost! Yeah! Hellhammer! Woo! And then we're all giving the devil horns, you know, inside. Here.
Then Walter made it home safely, using one final blast of Megadeth to see off a stray wolf that was prowling close to his front porch.
You would think in Norway that children and wolves would be natural allies. I mean, aren't the Norwegians always just, I don't know, aren't they always just stabbing people and drinking blood and burning down churches? Isn't that kind of their whole, isn't that their national pastime over there?
And they keep wolves as pets.
Yeah.
And as their animal familiars.
I mean, it's just, they all just, what was I going to say? It's not that they, I was going to say, it's not that Norwegians are an evil people, but they do seem sort of...
Sinister?
They do seem sort of sinister in a Viking-like kind of way, you know, don't they? When you picture a Norwegian, don't you just picture him with, like, sort of corpse paint and just sort of, you know, my name is Grishnak.
See, no, I think I realize that they must be hardy people to live where they live and to have accomplished the Nordic things that they've done. But when I think of someone Norwegian, I just think of somebody very, very pale and thin and weak and probably sad, like, all of the time.
You just think of... You just think of what's his name from the British Office, Gareth.
Yeah,
is that his name?
Yes.
Yeah,
I think of him. That's what I think Norwegian people are like.
I could sort of see him like what's his name, Gustav? If you were not to feed him for a while, him access to a gym.
It's like Swedish people. I always think Swedish people are very robust and that they all look like the people in ABBA. But the Norwegians, I always think of them as being much smaller, paler versions of that, which is probably not true. They probably are gigantic, huge, robust people.
I always picture them looking like that. Is it Kettle One, where it's like the Viking chick riding a polar bear?
Yeah.
With a metal brassiere?
Yeah.
I picture all the Norwegians looking like that, and then just covered in the blood of their enemies.
Well, and apparently holding cell phones that they play Megadeth on.
Of course. And if that's not true, by the way, I would not let anybody know that. I would let everybody just continue to believe as I believe. You are listening to a Legion of News. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do science.
Here's your science on the march. Brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them at squireselectric.com. We'll talk more about that here in a bit. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Today kicks off an urgent meeting between some of the greatest minds in science, a debate that could result in a rethinking of the most elemental scientific measurements.
Am I late somewhere?
Will the kilogram ever be the same? The researchers are gathering at the Royal Society in London to discuss adjusting the fundamental mass of the kilogram. The kilogram is the only unit in the international system of units whose measurement is based on a physical object. And anyone who's ever stepped on a scale knows that, you know... Anyway, I'm not going to read the adorable rest of that sentence. Currently, the kilogram is based on the mass of a platinum iridium bar stored in a vault in a Parisian suburb. Scientists estimate the bar's mass may have actually changed by 50 micrograms over the years, which they note is the mass of a small grain of sand, 0.4 millimeters in diameter. The best and the brightest in science will meet to work out a constant on which the kilogram can be based. They anticipate it will be tied to the value of the Planck constant, H, which reflects the size of the smallest particles of physical matter in quantum physics. So there you go.
I'm really glad that there's somebody who can figure this out, because I know that on some level that sort of information is important. Like, I don't know, for moon landings or... soap or something, but I would have no... It's like that thing, that Avogadro's constant, which is the number of... I don't know, it's like the number of helium atoms in like 1.87 milliliters of space or some crap. And it's an incredibly huge number, and it's really important for all kinds of things. And a guy figured it out like 500 years ago with like some sand and a pencil. And I would have no idea how to... Like if they lost the slip of paper that was written on and I had to find it, like I'd be there all day.
Here's the thing I don't understand. It's like, okay, there's this one thing that the kilogram is based on.
Right.
The kilogram weighs the same as this specific thing that we have locked in a vault somewhere. But over the years, we have created gazillions of things that weigh a kilogram or various multiples thereof.
Right.
So therefore, don't we know what it weighs? We don't really have to use that one thing anymore, do we?
Well, this is like when people always, like when people in Hollywood are always talking about how we really have to work to, to preserve films, you know, and to safeguard and make sure that films, you know, aren't allowed, you know, that they're preserved in a vault. You just stick it on your computer. It's there. You've got it. It's, you know, you don't really need to do anything else. You rip it right onto your laptop. Bam! The film is preserved forever. I don't understand why it's such a big deal. So same thing with this. Seems like if you make a copy, hey, guess what? You got two. A couple copies? 4, 8, 16. You're good, like forever. Mm. Yeah, I don't get it. Mm.
A new study claims the best way to remember something important is to remember it while you're asleep. The research in this week's Nature Neuroscience claims reactivating newly learned memories during sleep rather than when awake does a better job of strengthening the memory trace.
How am I supposed to remember to do that, do you think? Is that where, like, Dennis Quaid is to come in and remind me to do it?
Well, I guess, I don't know. They trained people, subjects in a spatial memory task, to learn the object's location in a grid. And at the same time, an odor was released, the idea being to associate the memory with the smell. So they sent one group to sleep and a second group stayed awake. After 20 minutes, the sleeping group's brainwave patterns, when they were in a slow wave sleep, both groups were subjected to the same odor again to reactivate the memory. So the thing is, yeah, they show you something and then you smell something at the same time.
Right.
One group is put to sleep and the other is awake. And then they have you smell the same thing again. Then they woke up the sleeping people, and both of them had to, like, locate the objects in different locations and without the odor. And apparently...
Oh, if the memory was underscored while you were asleep, then it filed it more securely.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. So they were able to figure it out easier and
quicker. Well, I guess
it's
true, because you're not distracted by a bunch of crap if you're, you know, if you're asleep. You're not busy, like, staring at the secretary across the hall or something.
Yeah, and then they also gave people MRIs, and it indicated that during... awake state, the lateral prefrontal cortex is activated, but a completely different part of your memory bank is operating when you're asleep. So they figure that you might be able to store things better there.
Back on the kilogram thing for a second, this is the sort of explanation that doesn't help. John says, a standard, which he, I think, unnecessarily puts in all caps, must be at least 10 times as accurate as anything that you use to compare it to. One preposition is enough. Anyway, he says, therefore, this is the kilogram. But that doesn't make any sense, because there is no more accurate than. It's either accurate or it's not.
Yeah.
Like, there's no 10 times as accurate. Being accurate, I don't mean to sound cranky, I'm just saying being accurate is a binary state. Something is either right or it's wrong.
I mean, I can see if you have one specific thing, then over the years, if you think that manufacturers, like, say, measuring cups, you know, and if you were measuring things by... We use both weight and mass as measurements, but if you were saying that, you know, if you had something you were measuring by mass, which is basically what a kilogram is, and you think, okay, over the years, manufacturers of things that measure that may have gotten off the standard a
bit.
So, you know, you do have that thing to go back and check against. But I don't know. I'm not buying it.
Seems like if you've got something in a drawer somewhere... I'll put it this way.
If you already have a number of things that are accurately the same as this one thing, you no longer need that one thing.
That's what I'm saying. This is my point. It's like, you know what it is? It's like when you get a computer, you know, and they give you this the installation disk or the whatever. You know, like, here's your Windows startup disk, or, you know, like, here's your Mac OS X disk. First thing I do is just copy that. I copy that, and then I, like, seal it up in a thing that goes inside a metal box at my house that is hidden in, like, a bat cave place. And it's, you know, and so then I got... Now, I'm not going to go out of my way to destroy the first one, but it's like, if that were to happen, guess what? Got another one. Exactly the same.
Well, I was... I'm listening to that Bill Bryson book, and he just talked a little bit about the whole advent of paper money and how people used to walk around with bags full of gold coins and things, but if you wanted to make large purchases, you know, that was... Very
heavy.
And so they started, you know, they developed banks where you would leave your gold at the bank, and then they would issue you, like, pieces of paper that you could say, I actually have this many pieces of gold someplace. And then, every single major civilization apparently has done something similar where they'll go, this is a representative of actual worth of money. But at this point, money is sort of fictional. We don't deal with, you know, we don't even deal with the paper anymore most of the time. We just do. So really, does there have to be a big pile of gold sitting somewhere? Because money is really just, you know, an illusion at this point. It's something that is numbers on a page and is manipulated. People aren't running around and shifting big piles of gold back and forth.
You know, that eye on top of the pyramid is looking right at you all the time. Hey, somebody just says, I love how science is using something as a constant, but Rick and Don, quote, aren't buying it, end quote. And then he puts, justifiably, LOL.
Yeah.
And that really is a lol-worthy statement.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. All right.
Apple says its App Store has hit the 10 billion downloads mark. The milestone, announced on Apple's website, arrived as the company's hugely popular smartphone is likely to become even more popular with the addition next month of Verizon Wireless as a carrier. The company has sold tens of millions of iPhones since the device launched in 2007.
What was the first sentence of this? I missed the first sentence.
Apple's App Store hit the 10 billion downloads mark.
Is this for the iPhone? Because there's that App Store for the Mac now, too.
It's for both the iPhone and the iPad.
Because I did that over the weekend. I had that thing where it was you're a Windows user, so you get this like 50 times a day. You have to update something now. It's really important.
Yeah.
Your McAfee parameters are out of date, or your Norton antivirus thing is going to expire.
Well, my laptop is an HP, so at least twice a week I get these messages from HP saying that there's some kind
nothing works
amazing thing that they have to do to my computer to make it better.
So Mac doesn't do that very often, but I kept getting that prompt where it's like I had to update the OS, and so I finally did it last night, and I was like, why the hell do I have to? Fine, nag, be gone, and so I got rid of the. I got rid of the nagging thing by finally updating my Mac. And I found out that, I'm not saying there wasn't other stuff they did, but the biggest change that I could see, in addition to the ubiquitous iTunes update, which they always force on you, the biggest thing I can see is that when I updated my Mac OS, that on the dock down below, I had an icon for the Mac App Store, which then, like a freaking bunny, I just clicked on, I guess I should go there. And, so you can buy 16 different versions of Angry Birds or something, which I did not, by the way. But I have to tell you, though, that App Store is a great idea. It's a really great idea because the first thing I did when I got my Mac is I got the, because I'm kind of a patsy, I bought that iLife, which is sort of like Microsoft Office. But it's like, how often do you need the PowerPoint presentation? Never. I really just need word processing and a spreadsheet. And this, you can actually buy those things a la carte. So it really is a glorious day to be us done, or me.
Well, the 1 billionth user was a little girl. I think she's 10 years old or something, and she had downloaded an app for something where you make virtual paper airplanes and float.
I've
fly
seen
them
that. That is pretty fantastic.
And so the people from Apple called the house to congratulate her and say that she'd won $10,000. I think probably in merchandise at the Apple store.
Also to find out what blood type she is.
And the girl's mom thought it was a prank and hung up on
wow,
Apple.
Wow, that's great. Oh, okay. Well.
Yeah, right. You bet. Shut up.
Somebody's got something she can hold over mom for the rest of her life. Is that the end of science, or we got one more?
Yeah, no one wants to hear about cold fusion right now.
No,
we'll do that later.
No, because it's not possible.
Yeah.
Don't forget that Science in the March here at Legion of News at Cascadia.fm, brought to you by Squires Electric. Electrical wiring or wiring of any kind, whether it's Ethernet wiring, your intercom system, or your broadband, you don't really think about that stuff until it doesn't work. And then you just curse the darkness. Then you just shake your tiny fist at the darkness. And then you don't really do anything because it's dark. And so, step two has to wait till morning.
And no one can even see you shake your fist.
It's the most impotent kind of fist shaking. There's never been a fist shaking that is more useless in any event. So, forced all that. Just don't, or a word that's like that. Don't just get it taken care of in advance so you don't have to worry about it. If you're going to be moving into a new house, if your office is going to be moving into a new building, even if you're going to be staying in the same building, but if you are a business, if you are the decision maker, if you're the guy who kind of calls the shots at the place, if you are a restaurant especially, or anything where you got to be inspected on a regular basis, you want to make sure that everything works properly. Because if it doesn't, I tell you this, the day that something in the wiring starts going a little wonky, that's going to be the day that the guy from, the courthouse or wherever, the big permit building downtown is going to come and he's going to walk through with a clipboard and he's going to ask to see everything. And you're going to get something that doesn't work. And then the next thing you know, it's like you're going to have to be, you're just standing outside where they put biohazard tape all over the joint. So you don't want to do that. You make sure that your electrical system works and works properly. If something is amiss or something isn't working quite right, they can get it fixed. They can get it fixed the first time, and it's going to be back to operating the way it ought to. You can also get an estimate up front so you know about what it's going to cost you. And, of course, they're a proud sponsor of Legion of News. So they deserve your alliance for that fact only, my friends. 503-252-1609 is how you contact them. 503-252-1609. Good enough to wire the studios of the Emerson News Network. Good enough for your place. That's 503-252-1609. Squires Electric, who have brought you this Science on the March. Here is Don Taylor.
Boy, people are really upset about that kilogram thing.
Do you mean at us?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
The email saying, yes, it is the kilogram, in the sense that it is the standard against which anything claiming to be a kilogram is compared to. It's a kilogram, too, but it's also the kilogram in the sense that it's the one thing used to establish what a kilogram weighs. Oh, my God.
Is this how, just because you have Craig Gass, you still need Al Pacino around?
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly it.
All right.
because without the real Al Pacino, you would not know if Kyle Gass was accurate in his Al Pacino-ness.
Okay.
A drunken Washington State teen convicted of stabbing a young man who accused her of having stinky feet must complete a writing assignment while in prison. Dallas Smith, 18, pleaded guilty to second-degree assault with a knife for stabbing Willie Simpson, 19, at a September 7th party after Simpson teased Smith about having smelly feet. Smith was sentenced to 15 months in prison on Friday by Snohomish County Superior Court Judge David Kurtz, who gave her the assignment of completing a six-page research paper on how the excessive drinking of alcohol can destroy lives. Let me be absolutely clear, he said. This case is not about smelly feet. It is about binge drinking and the criminal behavior that did flow from that. The stabbing occurred at a Monroe, Washington party, at which the intoxicated Smith removed her shoes and attempted unsuccessfully to do a backflip off a deck. When Smith removed her shoes, Simpson teased her about having stinky feet, at which point Smith began hitting him. Simpson pushed her away, prompting her to grab a knife contained within her coat and plunge it into Simpson's back.
So she's just carrying a knife with her, and also she's like blind drunk.
Right.
Okay.
And so anyway, one of his lungs collapsed, and the knife was still in his back when the authorities arrived, and they transported him to Seattle for surgery.
Having a collapsed lung sounds like it is the suck. That, no pun intended. Oh, yeah. Seems like that's a thing that's very unpleasant. Also, if you're just sort of walking around and you've got like a huge knife in your pocket, and also you're going to be drinking a lot, and just a guy saying your feet smell, which is probably true, let's be honest.
Yeah.
The question is, what do they smell of? You know, and that's enough for you to just shiv the guy. First of all, it seems like completing that essay, maybe this is the point, that completing a six-page essay is going to take you, I would imagine, weeks at the outside, perhaps longer. So, you know, maybe really that's what this is all about.
Well, she does have until May to do
really?
It.
Really?
Six pages. So, you know, that's...
So she could do like a page every 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, something like that, and she'd be good.
Yeah.
Okay.
She later apologized, by the way, for what she admitted was a, quote, great error in judgment.
Do we know that her feet did not smell?
We don't, but
he should have made her sort of, you know, do a public, like a microbial inspection of the feet.
You know, if she's that sensitive about her feet, they probably do smell. She probably was aware of it and was already concerned, and she was angry for him pointing something out that she would really rather not think about it.
Hey, what season of The Wire are you on?
I'm about to start season 2.
Okay.
Why, is there something having to do with smelly feet?
That reminded me of something that comes later, but doesn't matter. Don't worry about it.
Last month, President Barack Obama was in...
Who?
Barack Obama.
Okay. For a minute, I thought you said Jodie Forsyth.
No, it'd be President Barack Obama, who can also be referred to as Mr. Obama.
Okay.
Or President Obama. He was in Afghanistan to meet with troops last month. He asked the troops what he could do to make their job easier, and many responded with, take care of our families. Today, the president announced more support for U.S. military families. One facet, he said, is to end homelessness.
We are going to remain relentless. Not just at VA, but at HUD and HHS and across the government, in our fight to end homelessness among our veterans. We have to have zero tolerance for homelessness among our veterans.
Here's how you can tell that there's something we're not going to fix, that we say we have zero tolerance for it. That's just, you know what it is? That's a little code there. That's like an asterisk. That's like when that guy Popoff, the faith healer, when he gets up there and, like, he's talking to the chick out in the audience who says, like, our brother has a question which has really been eating at him. And he goes, ah, eating ears. Ah, yes, your hearing will be restored. That's like, so it's a total code word thing. So when Obama says, we have zero tolerance, or like we're declaring a war on something, not going to fix it. Not going to do anything about it.
In certain cases, I can see, like, with something like a policy in your workplace of people coming into work... drinking or something like that, I can see how zero tolerance makes sense. In a school situation, I don't necessarily agree with zero tolerance policies for things like, you know, having a pointy weapon or something like that, but at least it makes sense. It means that you do this thing and we have zero tolerance. You are going to get the punishment. I don't think zero tolerance as a concept really works when it comes to homelessness on a national scale.
No, probably not.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
No, it's ridiculous, especially because, well, never mind. No, it doesn't. It's ridiculous. It's a silly idea.
Obama gave some examples of what's planned to get this done.
We share.
I'm sorry. That's
Michelle.
Damn it.
Where the hell?
There we go.
More military housing, more child care, new schools for our military kids, more counseling and career support for spouses, more help for those tireless caregivers.
I can't quite figure out what he's done. Wait. There we go. Okay, done. Yeah. So does zero tolerance for homelessness mean that, like, if you're out and you're just sort of living on the street because you like your freedom, that we're going to come by and just beat you with a stick until you move into a double wide somewhere?
Well, I think
get into a ranch home now.
I guess he means zero tolerance for homelessness for people who are related to people in the military.
I just don't know what zero tolerance means, though.
No, I don't.
It seems as though you're really not going to be given a choice about it, which, to be fair, does seem to be the government's method for treating all of our problems recently, is you just won't be given any choice.
Well, and if he says that we need to have a policy of zero tolerance, what does he mean? Does he mean we?
You.
We, as in all of us collectively? Does that mean that if I see a homeless guy...
We're going to be quartering some people at your house, Dom.
Yeah, if I see a homeless guy, I've got to pull my car over to the side of the road and bundle him into the backseat of the car and give him my spare room?
You can put him in your trunk.
Then what happens when I don't have a spare room anymore and I see another homeless guy and there's nowhere to put him? How many homeless guys am I supposed to have in my house?
Seems like somebody needs another part-time job, Don. Why do you hate the government and veterans?
I'm so confused.
And freedom. Yeah, I don't know. It's best if you just sort of realize that most of these statements mean nothing. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for... I was going to make some snide remark, but see, the thing is, never mind. I just interrupted myself here. I was gonna give the whole reason for why I didn't reflexively make snide remarks through all that, but it's just, you know, the explanation is just so disproportionate. It's like... As I wade into this, I realize I don't even care. You're listening to Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Legion of News. Don't forget, coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, the Rick Emerson radio program takes to the airwaves around this fine globe. We've got your snuff watch coming up today. Also, what is the... I'm sorry, the second watch? We have a snuff watch and a...
Cheney watch.
Cheney watch coming up today. Also, Mr. Aaron Duran will be joining us with another installment of the Week in Geek, and our good friend Eric D. Snyder, who writes for CinematicalFilm.com and who's the host of Movie BS with Baron Snyder, right here at Cascadia.fm, Fridays at 11 a.m. to noon. We'll be calling us from Park City, Utah, where he is attending Sundance Film Festival. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news.
E! Online reports that former Dancing with the Stars contestant and I guess tween idol is a good term for him, Aaron Carter, checked into a rehab center in Southern California earlier this month. Carter, who was treated for substance abuse issues on Celebrity Rehab 2, decided to enter rehab on his own volition this time. He was struggling recently and needed this.
Now, is this the same story we had last week? Is this another?
No, this is somebody else in rehab.
Didn't we have a Backstreet Boy in rehab last week?
Yeah, McLean.
A.J. McLean?
A.J. McLean is in rehab.
By the way, have you noticed that the internet is just littered with Backstreet Boys photos today?
No.
So if you go to, like, Yahoo and, like, you know, a lot of, like, sort of, like, a lot of social networking sites, if you go to them, it's like they're wallpapered with Backstreet Boys stuff. There must be some... Did you say they have a record coming out
of
some tour or
something?
Yeah,
they're going back out on tour again. So apparently they all have to, like... They all have to dry out first something.
Well, it's sort of a preemptive thing. You know, it's like stopping off in the bathroom before you take that car trip. You know, you don't have to go, but once Dad backs the car to the driveway, he hates to turn around.
I was thinking more about it. They want the drugs to go further on the road.
Yeah.
And you know, once you clean and you get it out of your system, you know, you're a cheap drunk for the first few weeks.
You can get by on less.
Yeah. Zsa Zsa Gabor, 93-year-old Zsa Zsa Gabor, by the way, was released from UCLA Hospital this weekend. She checked into the hospital January 14th and had a portion of her right leg amputated. The actress had a gangrene infection following her hip replacement surgery last summer. A deer trying to jump a fence into rapper Eminem's Detroit property has been impaled on the fence, and its bloody carcass left dangling on the gate.
Is this two fence impalings in 1 hour?
It is.
Awesome.
The tragic event was one the rapper's brother saw fit to capture in a photo, which he sent to a local radio station. So you can look that up on the air. Eminem deer impaled fence.
Totally looking right now.
The intruding animal set off an alarm system at the entertainer's home Wednesday night, but when no one was found trying to enter the house, security thought it was a false alarm. But in the light of day Thursday, the dead deer was discovered, and Eminem's brother Nate sent a photo of the carcass to a local radio station. The sad event took a positive turn, though, as the Michigan Department of Natural Resources removed the deer to process the meat and give it to a family in need.
Gave it to the homeless.
It gave it to someone who needed meat.
Don't you get the sense that this is sort of like the future of Detroit, you know? That eventually just everything in that state half of the state, you know, of Michigan is going to be used to feed the other half.
Yeah, half of it is rappers, the other half is roadkill.
That's really, you know, and at some point they're just going to throw a net over the entire place and just going to say, like, sort it out yourself. It'll be like that Stephen King Dome novel, you know, and it's like, we're going to come back in 100 years, you know, figure it out.
Reality star and rapper Flavor Flav's restaurant, Flav's Fried Chicken, opens today in Clinton, Iowa.
Really? In where?
Clinton, Iowa. Flav, star of VH1's Flavor of Love and member of Public Enemy, plans to turn his restaurant into a chain. I would totally eat at Flavor Flav's Fried Chicken, by the way.
Eat at Flavor's. Just to balance things out, you should call him President Flav.
As long as he wasn't there. Because if he was there, I would have probably no appetite.
Okay.
Having tugged on the heartstrings for decades with shows that reunite lost relatives, the queen of talk shows has experienced firsthand the power of reunion by meeting the half-sister she never knew she had. Oprah Winfrey said on an episode of her talk show that aired this morning, "Imagine my shock just a few months ago at the end of October when I found out I have another sister living just 90 minutes away." She went on to explain that her half-sister, single mother of two, Patricia, discovered the two were related in 2007. The discovery came after she'd already spent years searching for her birth mother, who turned out to be Oprah's mother, Vernita Lee, who gave her up for adoption in 1963. "I was 9 years old at the time, living with my father in Nashville, Tennessee," Winfrey said. "I had no idea my mother was even pregnant."
So this is, you know, the thing about Oprah is, wouldn't you imagine that if you even just had the tiniest inkling that you were related to her, like, that's worth an investment in a private investigator.
Oh, yeah.
That's worth, you know, whatever it takes for some gumshoe to go figure it out, you pay it. Because, I mean, that is a thing. That's, as you, we were talking about this on Friday, that's like playing the long shot pony for $5, you know? Yeah. You're only out $5, but if you win, baby, you're in. You're in the chips.
No, why couldn't I be related to Oprah?
I don't know. Well, I mean, have you ruled it out?
I'm pretty sure.
Sounds like members of her family kind of got around. So, yeah. You know, it's not like it's outside the realm of possibility.
Winfrey's family seemed as puzzled as the rest of America ahead of this morning's broadcast. "I don't have the least idea what she has in mind," said Vernon Winfrey, her father. Kitty Kelly, who wrote the unauthorized biography of Oprah last year, told a blogger at Time Out Chicago that the mystery guest would be a half-sister named Bunny. Citing an inside family source, Kelly claimed that Winfrey's mother gave her away because she couldn't afford to take care of her.
I want Bunny and Flavor to have their own TV show together somehow. I don't know why. The Bunny and Flav show. That doesn't the Bunny and Flav show totally sound like some sort of like Soul Train spinoff from the 70s that you would have watched, you know, where Bunny and Flav talking live to Philadelphia every morning.
Oh, I do like that idea.
Yeah, I'd totally watch that show.
He should marry her.
Hey, is Soul Train still on?
I don't know.
It's gone a long
Probably
time,
not.
I would imagine. That's too bad. Yeah. Okay.
That's all the entertainment.
There's your entertainment news. Ow. That was me hitting the microphone with my hand. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, coming up next hour, Mr. Aaron Duran will be on the Rick Emerson Radio program for the Week in Geek. Also talk to Mr. Eric D. Snyder, who is at Sundance, plus a Cheney watch and a snuff watch. That is all coming up at RickEmersonShow.com. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Representative Gabrielle Giffords' recovery has been delayed by a buildup of spinal fluid in her brain, according to the Associated Press. The buildup occurred after Giffords was transferred to a Texas hospital on Friday to begin rehabilitation treatment. Doctors said Giffords would remain in intensive care while a catheter drains the fluid from her skull. Fluid buildup is not unusual in gunshot victims, but Giffords can't be moved until the rehabilitation center until the issue resolves itself or the catheter is replaced by a permanent shunt. Doctors are wary of the latter option. One doctor said, "You prefer to wait as long as you can before deciding to put in a permanent shunt. That's a lifelong commitment, but the risk of infection goes up exponentially the longer the catheter is in." The Washington Post reports that surveillance video, speaking of which, shows the mass shooting in Tucson 2 weeks ago in graphic detail. Pima County Sheriff's Investigator Richard Castigar says the video clears up some of the confusion that resulted from differing eyewitness accounts.
"It gave me a perspective to substantiate what we were being told. When we were talking to all of these folks, it was really unclear to try to piece this together. And when I watched the video, it helped me understand very clearly the purpose and the focus that I believe the suspect had."
You know what's interesting is I haven't really heard a whole lot of talk about the nature of the gun. I mean, people keep saying Glock, but it's like, was there one? Was there five? Were there 10? Was it one that he reloaded? Was it two and he had one in each hand? Am I interrupting your texting? Are you just texting?
I am doing important show business.
Really? Were you placing a lunch order? Be honest. Don't lie or I'll know.
No, I'm actually confirming some stuff with Eric Snyder for for talking to us.
Okay, I'm just checking. Because here's the thing. Because you're on a streak of forgetting to eat before you come here and forgetting your lunch on the way. And then of like rooting around over there in the box like you're just a koala going after eucalyptus. So I'm just saying. I wanted to, because I was going to offer to share some food with you. But
oh,
that's
well,
okay.
Thank you. No, I'm fine. I'm fine food-wise. And I was I had gotten a text from Eric Sider asking if he should call us at 2:15 our time or Utah time. And I...
Why would you call? Okay.
And yeah. I was like, our time. And I'm like, it's different.
Yeah, they're an hour ahead.
I didn't realize they were an hour ahead.
Yeah, they're on mountain time. They're the only place in the whole world that's on mountain time, because you don't know anybody else that's on mountain. When they say, you know, starts at 9 p.m., you know, Pacific and Eastern, 8 p.m. mountain. And you're like, well, what the hell? Who's on mountain time? And nobody.
Apparently Utah.
Yeah, I guess.
Castigar says after the suspect shot Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, he fired at others around her.
We know from talking to witnesses and others in and around that chaotic scene that he fired indiscriminately from that point forward at people that were seated in chairs.
Yeah, so I haven't heard much talk except for people saying that there was a Glock involved. But it seems like a lot of killing and a lot of people being injured for a guy with just one gun. I mean, unless he was just some sort of a freakishly exceptional shot, which I guess is always possible.
And he did reload. The one woman grabbed the magazine out of his hand, but apparently he wrestled himself away from her and then reloaded again after that. So
apparently it was one gun with an extended clip, and he was stopped while reloading. It was a single gun. So, all right. Well, fair enough. All right.
A frail elderly widow turned into Superwoman to send a burglar screaming from her home by battering him with a walking stick. Doris Thiel, from Southampton. This would be in the UK. Doris Thiel, 84.
Is that your UK voice?
The UK.
Okay.
Doris Thiel, 84.
Come to Debbie Country.
Hit 6'4" Leon Ingram around the head for 8 minutes while her daughter Helen, 59, held him in a headlock.
That's awesome.
Terrified Ingram, 34, smashed his way through the conservatory doors with his head to get away. The serial burglar left a trail of blood to a nearby flat where he was arrested. Doris, who is 5'3" and lives in New Milton, Hants, said, I hope this sends a strong message to other burglars. If someone else comes around, they'll get more of the same.
See, that's the great... That's what you want to be when you're an old person. You want to be just sit there just sitting in your own pee or something. You want to be hitting a burglar in the face over and over.
And this is a guy who was jailed for 3 years for burglary before. He had 32 previous convictions.
So he had it coming.
And so Helen and her daughter won police bravery awards
well
for their
done,
actions.
Well done, Helen and her daughter. Congratulations.
Yes.
We salute you. That's great. And I like that it was like a family affair.
Yeah.
She had the guy in a headlock, and then the mom is just whacking him right in the face with a walking stick.
For 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Just kept whacking him in the head.
And that's a long 8 minutes, I would imagine. That's 8 minutes is like, that's all of Stairway to Heaven and another 20 seconds on top of it.
Yes.
That's a fact, by the way.
President Obama is calling the bombing at Moscow's busiest airport yesterday, a premeditated attack against innocent civilians. The attack left 32 people dead, 152 others wounded, although, again, that has been upgraded to over 300 people. White House spokesman Robert Gibbs read part of the statement issued by the president following the attack.
Michelle and I offer our deepest condolences to the Russian people who have suffered greatly at the hands of terrorism.
And this would be President and Mrs. Obama, through him, continuing to offer their deepest condolences.
We share your sorrow and a resolve to stand with you in our common fight against those who use terrorism for their political goals.
And that's Sarah Palin. Her words are more powerful than we ever suspected. Because, you know, the increased political rhetoric.
Oh, yeah.
Which
and that's
of course, the cause of violence everywhere.
The shooting.
That's
and
right.
And the stabbing.
Yes.
And the hay now.
Because that's what makes people go crazy, is Sarah Palin.
Oh.
Apparently.
And
so the glowing box told me. That's what everybody said. They told me it was Sarah Palin.
You know all the cows dropping dead and the birds falling from the sky?
Sarah Palin.
Sound of her voice.
That's right.
What's doing it. Sarah Palin.
It's just throttling themselves.
For once, a new poll has some good things to say about the future of the economy. According to a survey from the National Association for Business Economics, jobs outlook, which sounds awkward, hit a 12-year high this quarter, with companies projecting that hiring will exceed firing by 35%. Additionally, 62% of businesses say they plan to buy new equipment this year, and only 7% anticipate cutting wages. Encouraged by growing sales and demand for consumer products, 8 out of 10 respondents predicted that the economy will grow from 2 to 4% this year. The chief economist for the Consumer Electronics Association told Bloomberg things are headed in the right direction. Topping everything is the high number of firms suggesting they'll increase their headcount in the future.
What was that? What was the point of that whistle? What was that meant to convey?
That was me being all excited, I guess, about the jobs and the hiring and the whatnot.
Is that the excited whistle? It didn't sound like that.
It was a hoo boy. I don't know.
That was
know.
Sort of like a, that was like a look at the size of that wound. Like when a guy says, hey, look what I did with a stapler accidentally. And you go, I can't really do it right now.
I can't even do it on demand now. I can't, because I can't whistle.
But it's, you know, or like, look at this yacht that I'm buying. You know, when you kind of go, wow, hey.
Apparently, my reactions are completely inappropriate today.
No, it's it was unclear on it. I was a little vague. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. By the way, coming up at the end of today's broadcast, we'll try the. I'll be curious to see how it's going to work out. We'll try the exciting new lockout sounder from Cable Hashitani.
Oh.
Who has the, you know, Legion of News, Cascadia.fm. Because I had him recut that this weekend because, you know, he has said blah, 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 PDX.fm, and then I had to retire that because they changed the name. So we're going to try his new one today. We'll see how it sounds.
Nice.
It's going to be a live test.
Oh.
I've sort of tested it like in a laboratory setting, but, you know, we'll give it a try here in a few minutes.
Nice. Hopefully birds will not fall from the sky.
And we'll see. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. The Rick Emerson radio program featuring a Cheney watch, a snuff watch, Aaron Duran with the Week in Geek, and Mr. Eric D. Snyder calling in from Sundance, happening right now in Park City, Utah.
A Massachusetts man is being charged with creating bombs after police had been told that the man was blowing up snowbanks to avoid shoveling his snow. Abington, Massachusetts Police Chief David Majenski said Leo J. Powers, 23, is being charged with threats to commit a crime and possession of incendiary devices. After serving Powers with an emergency restraining order at a rooming house he was staying in, police learned Powers had a box of ammunition and a box with, quote, some sort of powder in it at his former address. Police were told Powers had devised a way to use the materials to blow up snowbanks instead of shoveling the snow, and had been doing it for some time.
I think that's pretty great, actually. I mean, really. I mean, who the hell likes to shovel snow? No one.
Yeah.
I mean, this seems like he has improved upon the snow shoveling in almost every way.
Exactly. Except for probably the loudness. Police and fire officials arrived at the house and discovered a container filled with military-grade ammunition and, quote, other stuff, including powders of some sort. The Massachusetts State Police bomb squad were called in, and the powder was sent to a lab for testing. And it was indeed explosive material. Powers, who has a firearms license, was told he needed to surrender all his weapons. He handed over a pistol and a shotgun to police. And I have revoked his license to carry, said Majenski. Meanwhile, we're investigating where he got all the weapons we confiscated and the powder. He said he got them at gun shows in Springfield, but we're looking into that.
When they say powders and such, it makes it sound sort of strangely Victorian, you know? Like it's a box full of snuff and another one that's, you know, that's full of, like, emulsified horsehide.
I like the way they make it sound really sinister that he had guns. That he had a license to carry.
I think it's just the big box of powder, though, that explodes. That's the thing that I would be unnerved.
Yeah,
by.
That's I can see them not liking
I mean,
that.
I'm not saying it's illegal, but it does seem like that poses some sort of a risk.
Yeah.
Because I mean, you know, he might have it for legit. Maybe he repacks his own ammunition or something.
Why revoke his gun license? I mean, he's not shooting people. He's blowing up snow.
Well, you don't have to convince me. I wish you'd. I mean, if we had snow here, I would request that he come do it here. I'm just saying maybe it's illegal to have a big box of black powder.
Well, probably.
Especially if you're in a... Because he's not, like, in a home. He's in a rooming house or whatever. So the people who share a wall with him might have some issues with that as well. They might feel like that doesn't contribute to their longevity. I'm just saying.
I wonder how many people knew he was doing this, though, before somebody in the neighborhood just finally complained.
How hard could it have been to figure it out?
You know?
Where's Ted? I don't know.
I just imagine neighbors going, God, I wish he wouldn't do that.
I wish he wouldn't.
I'm going to call the police if he blows up that snow one more time.
Mortaring again out back.
Because it wasn't like he did it once and they called the police.
Right.
They said he'd been doing it for some time.
Well, you know who complained is the guy whose walk he didn't blow up.
Or the guy next door that the snow blowed up. The snow blowed up and then landed in that guy's yard.
It's like when you with the leaf blower and then you have to blow him into old man Jensen's yard. And then he hates you because he's a crotchety bastard. We should end this now. This has been another exciting installment of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget this program is available later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. If you enjoyed our merry banter, and I don't see really any way that you could not have. I mean, it seems like a scientific impossibility. You can hear more of it at rickemersonshow.com for the low, low price of 32 cents a day. Actually, less if you get the annual subscription. That is one quarter, one nickel, two pennies per day. Join us tomorrow again at noon. Another exciting installment of Legion of News. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, Professor Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agle, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. We'll see you again tomorrow at noon. Thank you for listening. This has been another installment of
Legion of News. Only on Cascadia.fm.